ACC Nation podcast, episode 83. The crew today, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis. Chris Bond is strolling Toys R Us. Xavion returns. He's in Washington. And from Richmond, I'm Jim Quist. A whole lot on the plate, and we'll start with North Carolina defeating Louisville 1-0 to win the ACC Field Hockey Championships. Six ACC teams earned bids to the NCAA Field Hockey Championship. That's interesting. The NCAA Regionals for Cross Country get underway Friday. We'll keep an eye on that. North Carolina won the ACC Women's Soccer Championship, and along with the regular season champ Duke, our number one seeds going into NCAA play. They'll be joined by six other teams, all looking for a national title. The men, meanwhile, are working their way toward the ACC Men's Soccer Championship that will be in Charleston this weekend. The preseason men's basketball AP Top 25 is out. Duke topping the list. North Carolina, the top 10. Miami and Notre Dame make the top 15. Louisville takes a spot in the top 20. Well, Virginia and Virginia Tech just outside the top 25. Want to see and read more? Visit our website at accnation.net. Remember, that's .net. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so it comes to you automatically each week. Also, USCHO ice hockey rankings, Notre Dame in the top 10 for men. Boston College is second in the rankings this week for women. Golf Week Sagarin rankings, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Clemson are in the top 20 for the men. For the women, it's Duke and Louisville. Individual rankings for men, a nice race between Bryson Nimmer, Stephen Franken, and Will Zalatoris. Two women hold spots in the top 10. They're making it very, very interesting again this year. They really tore it up last year. Leona McGuire and Jennifer Kupcho are off to another competitive season. Really looking forward to seeing how that all ends up this season. So, guys, let's talk a little bit of football. And we'll start off with this first game here. And Xavion, since you're out and about, sort of, and on your cell phone, we'll jump right in on you, okay? How about that? And we'll talk about this Syracuse and Florida State game. Really, I don't think all that surprising, but here's the thing that I think that kept me entertained. It went all the way down to the last second.
Yeah, this was a really exciting game. It went back and forth throughout, and Florida State turned the ball over three times, or I think it was actually twice, and that kept Syracuse in the game, and they just weren't able to execute. Syracuse did a great job of forcing a lot of three and outs. Florida State was only 1-13 on third down conversions, so they were doing what they needed to do. I just think that Florida State outclasses them athlete-wise, and the athletes were able to take over the game with their big playability. Cam Akers had two long touchdown runs that kind of took this team out of Syracuse, and he had a career day, I think 199 yards and two touchdowns. So Syracuse just didn't have the horses to keep up with Florida State and lost the nail biter.
No horses, but they've got plenty of hearts. Will, what are your thoughts on that matchup between the Orange and the Seminoles?
One of the things that stands out to me in this game are the amount of plays that were run by the big disparity between the two teams. Syracuse ran 95 offensive plays, while Florida State ran just 56. And when you know, so a lot of the thing nowadays is, you know, running more plays because that gives you more opportunities to score. And I mean, yes, it has more, you have more opportunity to make mistakes, but I think that's why you see a lot of teams going to a lot more high tempo offenses nowadays. And, you know, Syracuse is really running that, and it's really, you know, working. Especially this year, I mean, they're down to 4-5 now, but you can see just what Coach Babers is doing, because this version last year would have not come close to having a shot to win against Florida State. But, you know, with Eric Dungy doing so much for this team offensively, going 278 through the air and 109 on the ground, you know, he did everything he could to keep them in the game, but felt like Cam Akers running for just under 200 yards and averaging 9 yards a carry was the big difference in this game. He was, you know, we've been saying with Patrick out for a couple of weeks now that he would get every opportunity to be the bell cow. And, you know, when you run the ball 37 times and he gets 22 of them, and he was so efficient with it that he really was the part that kept him in it, because as Xavion mentioned, FSU was 1-13 on third down. So that, So, you know, he did a lot to prevent those third downs, let's just say.
Boy, he was definitely ringing the bell. I mean, you're talking about being a bell cow. He was really just a terror on the field. And I think made all the difference in the world in that game overall. You know, I wonder what would have happened if Eric Dungy had not been injured. And really, I don't think he was performing. He's probably at about 70 or 80%. He just really wasn't all there as the game was winding down. I really wonder how that game would have ended up if he had been at 100% on that last drive. But, you know, that's the what ifs of this world. And quite frankly, you know, that's the fun of sports. So FSU doesn't have a shot at going to a bowl, which is kind of disappointing in a lot of ways. Syracuse, I think, does. Dino Babers has really done a good job in turning the program around. Impressive. It's fun to watch him, too. He's just like Mr. Cool and calm and collected on a sideline, and I really, really like that a lot. So, Will, let's talk about another guy. New guy who is cool, calm, and collected on the sidelines. You rarely see him expressing emotion, and that's Bronco Mendenhall. I think he had something to be pretty happy about with that win over Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people expected Virginia to come out on top in this game. I was listening. I was catching this game driving back or on our way through Indiana at the time and Ohio, and you know I was following along, and when Georgia Tech started the second half with a 78-yard TD run by Tequan Marshall and then a pick six, a banker, to go up 28-13, I kind of figured that the game was over. But nope, banker just marched the team right down the field. They scored again, making it an eight-point game, scored again later in the quarter, and got the point conversion to tie it. And then they went ahead, and it was back and forth, you know, throughout the end of the game. And then I don't think anybody expected Virginia to go down and score so quickly and on that game-winning drive to stop to ultimately get that W, their sixth of the season, which made them bowl eligible. And I gotta say this was a complete 180 from some of these recent performances against Boston College and Pitt, because They showed nothing in those games to make you think that they were couldn't even win a game the rest of the year. But you know, I say got to give credit to the defense too, even though they allowed 36 points. You know, Tequan Marshall, you know, was 6 of 22 passing through two picks, was sacked five times. So they did everything they could to disrupt that rushing attack, even though Marshall went for 143 yards. But still got a little bit of an issue with the amount of times Virginia's throwing the ball. Banker was a little off. He was 21 to 43, but he was clutch when he needed to be.
I always equate Banker with even a blind pig finds an acorn every once in a while, and Banker finds more than a few. Bob Uecker would say, yeah, he's done a complete 360. And it's like, you know, you're going like, what? Okay. And with Binkert, that's almost true. I mean, it's you know, the guy he started out really good, and he just had his moments. He's like that Daniel Jones moment with Duke. It's like, what in the world is going on with that dude? And then when you just about have written him off, he does that 360. So, I love you. Miss him dearly. Xavion, let's talk about that Georgia Tech and Virginia game, which, you know, was very surprising for a lot of folks.
It is, but at the same time, it's not really, because if you've seen Georgia Tech over the course of the season, even with going with the leads into second half, they have not been able to keep them, especially with the type of offense that they run. You would expect them to be able to just ground and pound and run out the clock, essentially. But this is, I would say, probably the third or fourth game this season that they've been beating a team pretty well and decisively, but have not been able to manage to win the game. So hats off to Virginia. They played a hell of a game. And, yeah, as Will said, Banker definitely put the team on his back and executed in times of need, even when, you know, mistakes started piling up and they were getting points put up on them that otherwise – when it happened, had they done a little bit better job protecting the ball. But great come from behind win for UVA, and we'll see what happens. They're bowl eligible with that one, correct?
Yep, they are.
And who would have thought at the beginning of the season that UVA would be bowl eligible this year?
Certainly not me.
I said so, but I thought to some extent I was being a little bit, I wouldn't quite say homerish, but maybe I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but I thought the schedule set up in a way that they could, but
you were an optimist, but you were also a realist there. You've never really cut them slack this season. You've been tough when you needed to be. So that's, that's true love. What can I say? Tough love. I will say this, and I always say it, and in some of the stuff that has been written here on accnation.net, we always make the point of saying that Scott Stadium is a dangerous place, and it is a dangerous place for Georgia Tech. They have found that out several times. You should never go in there expecting that you're going to come out in one piece or with a win.
Like the game we went to 2 years ago, Jim.
Exactly. And that should have been a Georgia Tech win. But Virginia just found something there and did the trick. And it was a fun game to watch.
You mentioned it, Jim. Georgia Tech's had a tough time winning at Scott Stadium over the past few years. I mean, there was that one year where I think Georgia Tech was undefeated and Virginia beat them. I can't remember which year that was, but... You know, Virginia wasn't good that year, but for some reason they beat them at home.
Man, it's a psych, man. There's something about that stadium too. It's I can't put my finger on it. Every time I'm there, there's something that feels like it's closing in on you, and I don't get that feeling from very many stadiums. But man, that one really does it. And maybe that maybe it's kind of a subtle psych. Who knows? So, Xavion, let's stick with you here and talk about your favorite team, Notre Dame, and how they performed against Wake. Since you're not really fond of the Irish, let's talk a little more about how Wake Forest performed, because I thought they did fairly well against what obviously, and I think everybody has to admit, is a pretty stout Notre Dame.
Oh, no, absolutely. This score is definitely closer than I think many of us thought it would be. Wake Forest, Wake Forest exposed Notre Dame's defense a little bit this game, putting up 587 yards of total offense on them. And in recent weeks, that's been a strong suit for Notre Dame, just as much as their ground game. But if you're able to rush the ball like Notre Dame did for 380 yards to match Wake Forest's 348 yards passing through the air, that's always going to be a good day, because it's easier to throw the ball around and disperse yardage amongst players rather than just having somebody or a group of guys run the ball straight down your throats like Notre Dame's been doing. They had some injury concerns too that helped I think Wake Forest a little bit in terms of momentum and whatnot, but then the reserves for Notre Dame came in and did excellent. The backup quarterback went 8 for 8 for a touchdown and 50 yards. Ian Book, he did great filling in for Wimbush when he was required to. Even some of it was mop-up duty, but when the game was on the line, he was able to come in and fill the shoes and lead the offense to the points. So it was a great win for Notre Dame, and I mean, at this point, technically, I know they're not in the ACC, but they are definitely looking like possibly the best team, and it's really hard for me to say that right now, but...
I know. It believe me, and there's something that's coming up that I'm going to let you gloat on. So, your time will come here in just a moment. You talk about the backup quarterback. I was very impressed both with Notre Dame and with Wake Forest. I almost hesitate to call Wake Forest backup a backup, because he's been a starter and has come in at some critical times and really adds a different dimension to Wake Forest. But I enjoyed that game. It was fun to watch. And I can't say, when I watch football, I don't really root for one side or the other. If somebody's a clear underdog, I like to see some plays that put the other team back on its heels a little bit, just for the fun of it. So in a little bit of a way, I was rooting for Wake Forest. I anticipated that Notre Dame would win. And I certainly didn't want them to lose their spot on the college football playoffs by losing to Wake Forest. But it was a fun game. I just kind of leave it at that. That's the only way I can look at it. Will, Wake Forest, Notre Dame. I think Xavion, you know, kind of hit it on the head. We didn't expect the score to be quite like it ended up.
Yeah, I mean, I could have seen a scenario where it could have been an 11-point game, but certainly not the amount of points that were scored in this game. 85 points in total. I don't know what the over-under was in this game, but I'm gonna go out on a limb and say the over won that bet. But the biggest thing for me is, you know, I've said about John Wolford, he's not the greatest quarterback out there, but he went 28-45 for 331 against this Notre Dame secondary, and maybe there's a little bit of a weakness that's been exposed after this week. We'll see, but they still ran the ball fairly well. Wake did, you know, Matt Colburn went for 120 and a score, but you know, we mentioned Josh Adams for Notre Dame got hurt earlier in the game, and really it was a committee of running backs that helped Notre Dame between Deion McIntosh and Troy Jones Jr. and whatnot. Those two combined for 19 carries for over 120 yards and two touchdowns. But I think a thing Notre Dame fans should like here is Brandon Wimbush had one of his better passing games, at least in terms of yardage. And you know, he's still got a lot of work to do in that department, but it feels like he's improving on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I would agree. And I was thinking that earlier today as I was working on some stories. I was looking at the performance ratings for quarterbacks, and it's some very impressive numbers across the country. And I was looking at his numbers and a couple other people, and really thinking to myself how much these guys sort of hit their stride about midseason, you know, like about three games ago, and really have started to fine-tune themselves and have confidence more so than, you know, I mean, everybody will argue, oh, they've had confidence since game, you know, no, they haven't, not since game one. It doesn't work that way. You have to build toward it, but he's fun to watch. Wolford is fun to watch. They just are really executing out there, and it's fun to watch that sort of football. And that was just a really decent game. Let's stick with you, Will, and talk about Virginia Tech and Miami. And I'm just going to say right up front, just so that we get this off the plate here, because I know Xavion is salivating there, waiting for me to say this. I was wrong about Miami. They performed admirably. You like that, do you? you love it. Okay. They performed admirably and really shut down Virginia Tech. Now, I tell you, I was disappointed in Virginia Tech's performance. And I can't tell you what part of it I was more disappointed in. I knew the offense was going to be a problem. I knew that was going to be a problem. We have talked about that the last couple of episodes about how Virginia Tech has a problem on offense. You look at, and it doesn't fall on Josh Jackson's shoulders here. His quarterback rating is not grand, but he doesn't have a lot of tools to work with. And honestly, I don't think that offensive line does diddle squat when it comes down to really making things happen. It's sort of like, I look at Lamar Jackson, he's got the same issue. If he had an offensive line that actually functioned, boy, you want to talk, that's all we'd be talking about, Lamar Jackson. We're not even talking about the former Heisman winner and one of the top-rated quarterbacks in the nation. He's not even really in the discussion. It's all because the team isn't functioning. So I'm going off on a tangent here, as usual, and Will found that out when he was with me in person. Yeah. And Xavion knows, too. Virginia Tech in Miami. Let's dissect this and see what we come up with, Will.
Yeah, you really hit the point there. Is the running attack for Virginia Tech is, I feel, a lot of the reason they lost this game, because they could not get much of anything going. They averaged 2.4 yards a carry, where on the other end, Miami averaged over 6 yards per carry. And Travis Homer, in the absence of Mark Walton, I felt like they would be just fine, and you know, even with Walton's absence, but Homer went for 95 yards in this game, and he could very well end up with 1,000 yards before the season's over, and he's still got, you know, three or four games to do it, depending on if they get to the ACC title game. But they have a, you know, they're strong. You know, they're, like I say, their running attack continues to be strong. Malik Rozier was struggled a little bit, 10 of 21, but and threw three picks, but did throw two touchdown passes, which where Josh Jackson didn't throw any. But he went in. It just you know, props to Miami. They were the better team that night, and I really feel like they really exposed the big weakness in Virginia Tech's offense, which is their running game and really their offensive line. Because I know Jackson got sacked a few times too.
Yeah, I think this is a reflection of Mark Richt as a coach. They do have talent, but I think Mark Richt as a coach is really savvy. I'm more and more impressed with what I see there every time I watch them play. And you know something? I said this earlier about a couple of other coaches, about that cool, calm, and collected on the sideline. Mm-hmm. That's a dude right there I would want to play poker against. Xavion, let's talk about your favorite team aside from USC, who's out of the running now, Miami. And how they perform.
Well, I mean, like you just said, and I brought this up a couple weeks ago, is that, you know, Miami doesn't necessarily have the players that fit best for Mark Richt's system. But when you have a good quality coach who knows what to do in times of need and put his players in the best position to be successful, you get results like we've seen with Miami all season. And my biggest thing with Miami is that I will not deny that there's been some close games that they should have lost, but it's the way that this team is playing. I mean, if your starting quarterback throws two picks and you're playing a quality team, those two picks will hurt you. But the defense stepped up and was able to contain Josh mm-hmm. Jackson and the Virginia Tech offense throughout the night so that those turnovers didn't necessarily come back to bite them in the ass,
yep.
Excuse my language.
You hit it right on the point there, you know?
Yeah, and that's been my biggest thing with Miami this year is that Mark Richt as a coach, if you remember when he was left Georgia, he had multiple 10-win seasons. He just couldn't get over the Alabama hump, which I don't think many coaches are going to be able to get over that hump regardless. But he was coming from success, so all he did is I take my SEC success, bring it over to the ACC, and it basically took a year or two to translate into wins for Miami. This isn't the Miami that we've seen in the last decade or so that, yeah, they might throw in a good season here, and then the following season they'll just shoot the crap. So that being said, I still like how Miami's playing, and it was a testament from this game. They were able to stick with the running game, even with the absence of Walton. They made plays when they needed to make plays, and even when they turned the ball over, they didn't allow that to deter them and get them out of the game against a very good Miami Virginia Tech defense and team overall. It wasn't Virginia Tech's night, and they had sloppy plays, and you lose a turnover battle 9 times out of 10, you're going to lose the game.
Two things I took away from that game that the first is that Miami's defense is pretty good, and I was very impressed by the way they stood up Virginia Tech and really, as Will was talking about the yardage there, keeping them to a lower number there on the ground. It just could. There was no game, and the passing game. I don't know what's going on there. It hasn't developed, and you know what? First year freshman quarterback. Okay, next year. Watch out for the guy. That's all I can say. And if Virginia Tech restocks in the right places, they'll be fine. Now, the second thing that I took away from the game that left a smile on my face, I got to see J-Lo. She looked good.
Smile on every man's face.
You know, the one thing I got to say, thank you, cameraman and director, because y'all had some good angles. All right. So let's move on to our next game. Oh, gosh. Clemson and NC State. And I think that's am I starting with Will as Is that where I'm starting? Because I forgot. I had an image.
I went last time, so okay. Xavion.
Xavion gets to go with the Clemson at NC State. I just had this vision of J-Lo in my head. My entire brain went,
you know. Nobody blames you, Jim. Nobody blames you.
That was all she wrote. My Clemson and NC State. All right, Xavion, save me.
This was a great game. It kind of reflections of NC State the last couple of years not being able to, come alive in the second half and really do what they're supposed to do. They were winning and going in halftime 21-17, and you have to always be happy with the lead against Clemson, but you have to make proper adjustments and whatnot in order to succeed. And I just don't think that they did that to come away with the win. Also, what I'm starting to notice from Clemson is that a lot of their offense comes from their big play ability. A lot of long touchdowns last game or against NC State. Feaster with an 89-yard touchdown. And it's just, I feel like I'm always hearing once a week or every other week hearing his name on a long touchdown, whether it's a catch, whether it's a run back, something. I'm just constantly hearing explosive plays, and basically their offense is very methodical with running the ball and little dink and dunk passes, but it's lulling the defenses to sleep to where they hit them with one of those big plays and they're putting points on the board. One thing I don't like, and I've been harping on all season, is I don't like seeing a quarterback have more carries than two running backs combined. Kelly Bryant finished with 20 carries, Feaster and I really don't know, Travis Etienne or Edney or whatever, that he had 8 for a combined 15. And Kelly Bryant's been having issues, health issues in recent weeks. And just to give him the ball 20 times or expect him to run the ball, do something with it 20 times is not going to help when it comes to the nitty-gritty and the end of the schedule slash the bowl game slash the playoffs if they're lucky enough to get into the playoffs. So feast or famine with the running the quarterback, basically, is what it looks like that Clemson's going with.
Since the lady of the house is from Louisville, Xavion, not Louisville, sorry, Louisiana. Her sister's from Louisville, or lives in Louisville, rather. I will just tell you that I asked her about the running back's name. She just looked at me and said, whatever he says it is, because that's the way it works. So whatever he says, if one day it's Etienne, you know, whatever he says it is, that's what you roll with. So, I was going to ask you, and I'm going to ask you, this big playability. Now, that can be a killer against teams if it's effectively exercised. And I think you kind of laid out the game plan there. A little bit of running here, a little dink and dunk, and then all of a sudden, boom, you hit. But is that something, do they have enough in that department to be consistent with the big plays, against every opponent? Because if somebody takes that away from you, is that it? Is that all you got?
Well, I think for Clemson's case, they do have the horses to do that, but the competition so far, yes, they played the ACC and had some great games and whatnot, but when you start looking at the playoff picture, and that's what a lot of people have Clemson in right now, teams that they're going to be facing are definitely going to look at that and see, like, we just don't give up the big play. We make them go 80 yards, whether they dink, dunk, run the ball and whatnot, and they're going to have to score on us by going the length of the field in 10, 12, 15 play drives, not in 5, 6, 7 play drives where they're dinking, dunking, and then they have an explosive play that gets them all the way down the field. And the likes of Alabama, Georgia, I don't know who's going to be the 3 or 4, or even Notre Dame, honestly, those teams aren't going to allow that to happen. I've always kind of been up in the air with Clemson throughout the season because I haven't seen enough. They have been able to win, but to the level to in the playoff and national championship picture, I'm just not convinced that they'll be able to maintain that.
I'm kind of there with you, to be frank about it. There's something about Clemson this season that has just sort of bothered me. It's just kind of hanging there in the background. It makes me question whether or not they're going to be able to go all the way. But, last year and the year before that, there is a consistency in their approach. And they found a way to make that happen. They have had this track record of just getting by people, just holding on, just making it happen. And they carry that all the way to the national championship and pulled it off there, too. The question is whether or not they have the personnel to do it this year. Now, Clemson and NC State, what did you see in that game, Will, from both sides? Let's look at both Clemson and NC State.
Well, on the Clemson side, I mean, Xavion mentioned that they have that big play ability with their two backs and Tavian Fuster and Travis Etienne. I took 4 years of French in high school, and I know that means Steven. It's in French.
So. It's the way Will said it, Xavion.
Etienne. Those two are two big play backs, and with Fuster taking that 189 yards to the house, and you know they have that knack, like I've said, and I tend to agree with Xavion too about the whole running Kelly Bryant more than the rest of your backs thing, and I'm always concerned about it because especially with a high profile team like Clemson, who you know I don't know much about their backup situation, but. Yeah, there was a high risk of injury here, and I hope you know in these last few weeks that they cut his carries down a little bit. Yeah, on the NC State side, I see Ryan Finley having another you know fairly good game despite the two interceptions. You know he did really well picking apart the Clemson defense, and he had Kelvin Harmon and Jacoby Myers go over 100 yards receiving as well. It was a good all around game. I mean, it was close. It was kind of what you expected, especially a game being played down there in Raleigh. You knew they were gonna the Wolfpack were gonna bring everything they had, but ultimately Clemson was just a little bit better.
Well, now I have a question for you, Will. It's not football related, but do you remember the name of any of your French teachers?
Yes, I do. I had one. I had the same one for 4 years.
Oh, okay. Live anywhere near you?
When I lived in Virginia, yes. She lived, within like 10 minutes of me.
Okay. Well, when we finish up the episode, I tell you what, I think that I really think that you should call her and tell her that, you know what, that those 4 years came in handy because on the podcast, I had to correctly pronounce it.
I thought you were going to go somewhere completely different than what the route you said just now.
Yeah. I'm like,
what? What's going on here?
Does she still live near you? Does she have my phone number?
Well, I'm not even going back to that conversation. Some quick thoughts here, just as we're kind of in the middle of everything here. So do you miss being in the studio, Will, with me? I mean, I
Yeah, it was fun last week hanging out in studio with you there. And that mic was pretty cool. I got to say that.
I almost sent it home with you. So Xavion, that means that you're next.
I don't know how to take that.
Well. I came out of it alive, so there is hope.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yep. Xavion, you're next in line. We've got Chris and Will down, so now it's Xavion's next. All right, let's take a look at and one other thing. I noticed you pointed this out, I believe – on Facebook, Will, that you went from 80 degrees and you returned home to 19. So,
oh yeah, I tweeted that out this morning because when I left, we left Virginia on Friday afternoon. It was almost 80 degrees and woke up here this morning in the Twin Cities and it was 19.
There you go. You can keep it. You can keep it. And you're lucky that Bond isn't on here talking about how it's 80 degrees down there year round. So, of course, it hasn't been this year. All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of these games that are coming up. And just we've got another Thursday night game, and have expressed before how much I absolutely loathe Thursday night football.
I'll give you this, Jim.
Yes.
I feel about that way this week.
Why this week?
Because of the game.
Oh, well, that's good enough reason right there. See? Why even bother? I'm just saying. Because it's Thursday night, but not because of the teams. It could be an interesting matchup. UNC and Pitt. That could be... I just don't think that Larry Fedora's group has given up yet. I think they still have enough in them. They have enough juice in the tank. They're really down to the, pickings are slim on personnel right now because so many people are injured and out for the year. Pitt is rising. So I think they're going to be challenging there for the Tar Heels. The other games on Saturday: Duke at Army, NC State at Boston College, Virginia Tech at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest at Syracuse, FSU at Clemson. That would have been what everybody thought, at least at the beginning of the season, that would have been the game of the year. Virginia is at Louisville, and Notre Dame is at Miami. That is going to be a huge, huge game. But the list, NC State and Boston College. Now, this has the potential of being a train wreck to some degree for North Carolina State. They're going to Boston, and it's going to be a little on the nippy side up there. And Boston College has risen. So some quick thoughts on that game, Xavion.
It's definitely upset alert for NC State. Boston College the last couple of weeks have been playing great football. And then you go with the fact that they had this bye week to kind of rest up and have extra time to prepare. And they're at home, so it's all the recipes for upset for NC State.
Yeah, this is an astute observation, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this game up. Will, any insight there that might make a difference here in how this turns out?
It all depends on how well Boston College runs the football. And you're seeing what A.J. Dillon's been able to do the last few weeks. He's now sitting at 843 yards for the season. So, and he could get the requisite 157 to get to 1,000 this week or after this game. And it'd be quite a feat for that team, as they've had little to no offense to speak of the last few years. But if they can run the ball well, I think they certainly stand a chance.
That's kind of my thought too. Sort of in the back of my head, I'm thinking to myself: Boston College is on the rise. NC State has taken a couple of licks here lately, and they may be down and kind of looking past the Eagles. Hope that is not the case. I think that might turn into a really good game. Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, the Tech Bowl in Atlanta. This game, on the face of it, may not have a lot of implications one way or the other, but Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech always give each other fits. And after coming off a disappointing loss, Virginia Tech could be, we might be looking at another upset alert here. Xavion, your thoughts on this game?
Oh, absolutely. If Georgia Tech can figure out how to win the second half, then this definitely could be a W for them. Virginia Tech's offense just the last couple of weeks has not been doing well at all, as we saw with Miami. And I think a lot of that is, like you said earlier, Jim, freshman quarterback, true freshman quarterback. Is he a true freshman or is he a redshirt?
Yeah, he's a true.
Yeah, so you have a true freshman quarterback that the receiving corps really isn't the best outside of Cam Phillips. So if you just double coverage their best receiver and make the other receivers beat them with the true freshman quarterback throwing the ball, it's hard. And throwing the fact that the offensive line isn't paving any way for anybody to run the football, keep the defense honest, it's going to be a tough offensive showing for Virginia Tech. And then throw in Georgia Tech and their ability just to run the ball down your throat and connect on the one or two pass plays that they need to get the ball down the field and get that huge play touchdown and whatnot. So I'm pretty sure I picked Virginia Tech to bounce back, but it's another upset alert for the Yellow Jackets.
All right. And Will, what do you think about the Hokies' chances of getting knocked off down in Atlanta?
Well, I definitely think that the Hokies are on upset alert. I don't know if they're on quite the upset alert as NC State is, but the way I can see Georgia Tech winning this game is obviously they're going to run the ball well, but I think it's just going to be about how well Virginia Tech runs the football on their end. They haven't done it very well. They obviously struggled last week against Miami, averaging over 2 yards a carry. They haven't had that one consistent back do it for them all season long, and I feel like they're having to rely on Josh Jackson a little more than they need than they should, and because of that, I feel like the offense is struggling. And if that trend continues this week, and I think Georgia Tech can pull off an upset here.
Okay, here's a game that I believe that has got potential written all over it. Is going to be fun. I think it'll end up being a shootout. And that is Wake Forest and Syracuse. And Will, I'm going to stick with you this time. And I see this as pretty much an even split. And I think that's the way that all of us looked at it in our picks this week as well. Seems pretty even on paper. Now, there's a couple of things that should bother you about both teams. Ultimately, I think I'm looking at Wake Forest as being the overall better team, but I still see this because it's going to be played in the Carrier Dome. So what are your thoughts there, Will?
If I was putting confidence points on this game, I would definitely just put a single point on it because I think this is about as even a matchup as you can get at it. Like you say, I feel like Wake Forest is maybe a slightly better overall team, but having this game in the Carrier Dome, you know, probably gives Syracuse a slight edge, and the line in this game is Syracuse by one. So it tells you what Vegas thinks. It's going to be a pretty even matchup. I actually took Wake Forest in this game, so I feel like they're going to do just enough defensively to stop Syracuse's offense, and then rely on their running game to you know, play ball control and ultimately win.
Now, on the other side of the coin, I think Xavion picked Syracuse, if I'm not mistaken. So, if that's the case, if you would, give us all the reasons that Syracuse is going to knock off Wake Forest.
They just had a competitive game. I like to think teams that are able to still move the ball and produce offense throughout week in, week out, especially at home, is going to be turned up a little bit more. And like Will just said, I believe it's going to be a shootout. I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being like the Oklahoma State game we just had this past weekend, where it's just points of both teams filling up the scoreboard. And I think in a game like that, the team that's at home will have a little bit more of an edge than the visiting team. So that was basically my reason why I believe Syracuse would win.
All right, and let's move on to one last game, because I'm not going to get into this Notre Dame-Miami game. As far as I'm concerned, I can flip a coin and probably come up with 100 million reasons why both of these teams ought to be winning this game. I think it's going to be a blast. The thing that I'm more interested in probably is the result of who wins and how much of a win it is. So I don't even want to go there. We could talk that one until we're blue in the face. But it is going to be a good matchup, Notre Dame and Miami. The game, I think, that will also be very entertaining because Virginia has been on the rise. Louisville, man, Louisville, what the hey? It's one of the most frustrating teams to watch right now. So Virginia at Louisville. Xavion, let's talk about the Cavaliers on the rise. The Cardinals, just plain vanilla.
Well, I went to check my picks for this week, so I had a little bit more confidence in what I was saying. And I picked UVA this week. I think it's just seeing how they've played throughout the season and have been able to come up in big games. And I think, again, to stop Louisville, if you can contain Lamar Jackson, even if he does 200 yards throwing and 100 yards passing and whatnot, but if you can contain him and just make the other players on Louisville beat you, I think it's a much tougher task for Louisville than it is for the other team. It's easy for 11 to send one than to send 11 on 11. And UVA definitely shown throughout the season a strong enough, sturdy enough defense to cause havoc for opposing quarterbacks. So I have UVA in this one. I would probably say It'll be a close game, but I still see UVA coming away with the win at the end of it.
All right, and Will, your thoughts on this matchup between Virginia and Louisville?
Yeah, I took Louisville in this game. I feel like because I still don't fully trust Virginia, even with the win last week. I feel like the offense has been too on the downside of the scale lately for me to believe them. I feel like Lamar Jackson will he will struggle a little bit. I feel like Virginia's really their defensive line and is gonna do a pretty good job, and the linebackers are gonna do a good job of containing them. But you know, on the other hand, I'm just not fully convinced that Virginia's offense can do the right things to pull off, you know, what would be an impressive road victory.
The AP 2017-18 preseason All-American team was announced this afternoon. And one player from the ACC on there, and I'll tell you who that is in just a minute, Miles Bridges from Michigan State, Alonzo Trier from Arizona, Jalen Brunson from Villanova, Michael Porter Jr. from Missouri, and... anybody want to venture a guess who the ACC player is?
Joe Barry.
Getting close.
Grayson Allen?
Nope.
Bagley.
Who's projected player of the year?
Probably Bagley, or are you talking about an ACC or?
Yeah, in the ACC.
Probably Bagley.
Bonzi Colson.
Colson, huh?
Yeah. He's the ACC player. Now, Joel Berry, Grayson Allen, they were both ranked pretty high there in the voting. Let's see here. I didn't look at the entire list. Marvin Bagley, also Duke. That's pretty much it. That's it. Those are the folks who made it onto that preseason list. We'll have that at accnation.net. You can check that out. We'll be having a lot more basketball stuff to talk about. Xavion will be talking about breaking stuff down and providing some very interesting insight. I know that Will and Chris are talking about stuff, and as the season starts cranking up, they'll have their view of what's going on and how it's going on and how teams are performing. We will also be doing from time to time some special podcasts, some short podcasts that will update you on what's going on with, you know, critical games and other things, stuff that's sort of breaking news with basketball. We'll share that with you. And because we can turn stuff around very quickly that way, it's probably one of the fastest ways we can do it, through podcasting. So we really want to thank you for joining us on each one of these episodes. And if you want to drop us a line, just send it to contact@accnation.net. contact@accnation.net. We'd love to hear from you. So Xavion, you're first up with your final thoughts tonight.
Two things. It's finally the best time of year for sports. Baseball officially is finished, so it's just football and basketball, at least for my household. So I do want to bring special attention to being the best time of the year for sports. Secondly, I do want to talk a little bit more about the Miami football, and we've been having discussions amongst ourselves in the Facebook group chat, and I've been the only lone Miami defender throughout the season. And it's because they haven't necessarily had any marquee wins in some of the other people's eyes, but I come from the school of if regardless of the end score, as long as you have more points and you come out on top, a win is a win, regardless of how you go about it and how you get it. You still have to execute and get that that W at the end of the day. And Miami's done that so far this season, and they're going to be having a real good and real tough test coming up this week with Notre Dame, but they are at home, coming off a big win over Virginia Tech. So I have Miami in this one, and I expect it to be a hell of a game, probably the ACC game of the year.
Okay, good points there, too, and point taken. So, Will, your final thoughts?
My final thoughts this week, I'm going to get into some ACC basketball stuff with the season kicking off on Friday. We'll start with Duke, because we all know they're ranked really high in the polls, but it's really a matter of how does this collection of talent gel as a team. That'll be determining how far they get, you know, as far as the season goes. Because obviously they had a lot of lot of highly touted players, but you know, if they don't mesh, then they're not going to be a top, a top 3 to 5 team this year. Louisville, be interesting to see how that team plays with, you know, the interim coach and the big cloud hanging over them right now. Will that affect them? Miami, I think, is a team I feel, if Duke does struggle, I think Miami could be the team that could sneak in there and win the league this year. Obviously, Virginia, you all know, I think has been criminally underrated this season. And I think by, like say, before we hit 2018, this team is going to be ranked. And a lot of people, especially nationally, are going to be wondering why they did not rank them preseason. Virginia Tech, I find to be one of the more interesting teams out there because they have pretty much no size whatsoever. So they're going to be doing a lot of interesting things with their offensive and defensive sets, probably going to be shooting a lot of threes and having to rely on that to win ball games. But they definitely have the shooters capable of winning a lot of games this year.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for joining us for the episode this week and for Santa Bond perusing the aisles of a really big toy store, and who will be back next week. Will, who has returned to a very chilly Minneapolis and probably is loving every second of it, and Xavion, who continues to gloat over his Miami picks, as evidenced earlier. I'm Jim Quist in a beautiful place I call home, Richmond.
Cool.
I thought.